Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. It's Talk Back. The entire hour, you have an opportunity to call in and share your thoughts, points of view, questions on any issue. I always start with the latest on health and healing. Then I share the latest also on the environment and social issues, but no guest, no in-depth commentaries. But I will share some important things like five things you may not know about aspartame, the artificial sweetener. Also, cancer caused by toxic chemicals, quote, is grossly underestimated in the United States. And also America's fast food health care coverage. So we have a lot to discuss. Let's begin. How many meals should you be having each day in order to not be obese? Well, it's not just the number of meals. It's whether you're exercising, the quality of the nutrients in the meals. If they're the average American meal, it's loaded with about 3,000 to 4,000 milligrams of sodium, lots of saturated or trans fats, excessive amounts of animal protein, lots of allergens, including gluten from wheat and dairy products. So they're not good. But according to the University of Eastern Finland, five regular meals a day reduce obesity risk among younger people. Here's what they say, quote, a regular eating pattern may protect adolescents from obesity. And that's according to 4,000 participants. When they eat breakfast, lunch, dinner, and two snacks a day, even those with a genetic predisposition to obesity had no higher body mass index, meaning fat, than their controls. But we also have to understand in many other societies, what they consider a meal is completely different than what we would in the United States. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal, International Journal of Obesity and International Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. When I've traveled to Finland, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, what I find in these countries is that they tend to eat smaller portions and they pride themselves on having lots of fish and vegetables. And in the summertime, more often than not, lots of fruits. Today, of course, because of transportation, you can get fruits and vegetables every day of the year. A lot of families believe that they're responsible for the health of their children, adolescents, and teenagers. And therefore, having a meal with the family is important. I would agree with that. So when you're starting the day with a healthy meal, and it's not loaded up with saturated fats and bacon, eggs, milk, and instead it's a hot cereal or a smoothie, a protein shake with some rice or some other type of protein, then you're doing all the right things. So again, kids in the United States are frequently not having those meals. What they're doing is they're staying up late, they're on the cell phones, they're on the computer, and then they're tired when they wake up in the morning. Their brain has not had the rest that it needs, nor the secretion of a hormone called melatonin from the pineal gland. And without that deep, rapid eye movement sleep, they won't be fully rested. So then you try to get them up in the morning, and it's hard. So what happens is caffeine and sugar. It's extremely common for kids to wake up, at least in the United States, with caffeine, either coffee or some form of a soft drink. And then in mid-morning, their snack is more sugar and more caffeine. Their lunch is generally a fast food meal, and their afternoon snack is, again, sugar and caffeine. All this is happening time and again. So what we need to do is we need to get kids to stop all of the hyper-extensive caffeine and sugar, get more fruits and vegetables, smaller meals, and take their time eating. Also, there's new benefits to eating oatmeal, but this time it's colloidal oatmeal. And colloidal oatmeal is a finely ground oatmeal that has been added to water. And it might sound like a food fad, but there is this kind of whitish colloid which has been around for hundreds of years and contains just as many healthy benefits as regular oatmeal. And in fact, I read this interesting article about how this colloidal substance has been around and is really beneficial for people. So what I want to do is give you a little bit of the health benefits of why you should be having organic, certified, gluten-free oats when you make your colloidal oatmeal. Even if you're not sensitive to gluten, the troublesome protein substance is best avoided. Now, it can be used to treat skin conditions. That's correct. Why? Because oats are rich in beta-glucans, and these beta-glucans are polysaccharides. They can reduce skin inflammation, they can activate the immune system of cells, and they can stimulate collagen deposition. And for this reason, oatmeal has been regarded as a natural skin healer, and colloidal oatmeal is no exception. The difference between oatmeal and colloidal oatmeal, however, is that the former is ingested as a food, whereas the latter is soaked by the skin and allowing for superior beta-glucan absorption. And consequently, virtually every inflammatory skin condition can be used using colloidal oatmeal. You could put it on sunburn, eczema, diaper rashes, poison ivy, sumac, and oak rashes, insect bites, acne, psoriasis. In fact, oatmeal colloids are so effective in this regard that even the Food and Drug Administration regulates them as a skin protectant. It also lowers cholesterol, and that's a big deal. The colloidal oatmeal's aforementioned beta-glucans are water-soluble fiber, meaning that they have a high water-holding capacity. This allows the beta-glucans to gently travel through the digestive tract, attach themselves to bile acids, which are made from cholesterol, and then remove them from the body. This ultimately reduces bad LDL cholesterol and total cholesterol, and that reduces your risk of heart disease. So just, you know, something to think about. One of the foods that is so common in New York City is Chinese food, and rightly so. The Chinese have a long tradition of some outstanding culinary treats, plus they have used food as a medicine for thousands of years. But what you don't want is you don't want the MSG, the monosodium glutamate. Why? Because it's not just an excitotoxin that can overagitate and kill neurons in your brain, but it will also, according to new research, induces kidney and liver damage in these studies. And those are vital organs we don't want damaged. The study was carried out by the Lab of Development, Aging, and Neurodegenerative Diseases in Guadalajara, Mexico, and have found that high concentrations of monosodium glutamate in the central nervous system cause neural necrosis. What that means in lay language is premature cell death, and severely impacting the neuroendocrine system, as well as blood flow and organ functions. And so therefore, it's not just an excitotoxin. A lot of people don't understand it can actually become a major toxin, and we don't want that. So wherever possible, stay away from MSG in food. Now, where are you most likely to get it and not even see it on the label? Soups and broths and bouillon blocks. Also, the instant noodles. A lot of prepackaged foods. Frozen foods and TV dinners. Sauces and seasonings and gravies, especially soy sauce. Salad dressings. A lot of the fast food chains and restaurants have it. Chips and other flavor-enhancing snack foods. It might be listed as a flavor enhancer. Meats, particularly those marinated or pre-seasoned, many of them lunch meat like hot dogs. And then sodium caseinate and carrageenan. These are common thickening agents. So you don't want that. So my suggestion is stay away from this. And because these are really can wreak havoc on you. And worse still, MSG is now commonly used as a major additive in vaccines. That's correct. Along with other ingredients like thimerosal, mercury, aluminum, formaldehyde, fetal bovine serum, polysorbate 80, and also shows up under sometimes hidden names like amino acids or L-monosodium glutamate or hydrolyzed gelatin, supposedly to preserve and stabilize the attenuated virus and maintain its effectiveness. Now, here's a list of vaccines containing MSG and the code names used on the ingredients list, which, like foods, have excitotoxic effects which can damage the central nervous system and the endocrine system. For example, anthrax and DTaP and hepatitis B and Hib, hepatitis A, and the human papilloma virus, the cervix, and the influenza, meningococcal, MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. And there it comes in the form of amino acids, glutamate, and hydrolyzed gelatin. And pneumococcal, rabies, rotavirus, and typhoid, and yellow fever. So easy enough to get it into our system, because people wouldn't understand that it's not just labeled as MSG. A good food that we don't eat very much of in the United States is watercress. It's a very important food. Sometimes it's used as a garnish, like parsley. Sometimes people have a little bit of it in a salad, but not a lot, because it's generally not available year-round, and mainly in the spring and summer. And it's a little bitter, but it's really good. Here's the latest study from the University of Southampton, published in the British Journal of Nutrition and Biochemical Pharmacology. Here's what it says. Watercress turns off breast cancer cell growth. Now, according to a study conducted at the University of Southampton, the plant compound, which is a isothiocyanate, suppresses breast cancer cell development. It works by turning off a signal in the cells which is necessary to cancer cell growth. So when cancer tumors outgrow their blood supply, they send out a signal to normal tissues to feed them oxygen and nutrients. And this compound in watercress interferes with those signals. That results in the starvation of the cancerous growth by blocking essential blood and oxygen. And prior studies have found the same plant compound to be effective in blocking the growth of prostate and colon cancer cells. So that's important to have more watercress to help protect breast health. But watercress is also recommended to ensure eye health because it contains a rich supply of two carotenoids, lutein and zeaxanthin, which protect against cataracts. So that's good. Also, new research on ginseng. There's a major study that ginseng is important as far as energizing the whole body. And the ginseng that is most popular is Panax ginseng, P-A-N-A-X. Now, there are others. There's Siberian, Korean red, Korean white. But Panax is the most researched and most frequently discussed. A lot of herbalists will use Siberian ginseng, and I recommend good old American red root ginseng, and it's grown in West Virginia and Wisconsin, wild. But why should we be having ginseng at all? Well, first, because ginseng is promoted for its longevity. One study started in 1985, looked at 6,282 subjects, both men and women, and the researchers found that within an 8-year study period, the male ginseng users had a significant reduction in death from all causes when compared to men who did not take ginseng. Ginseng was good for dementia prevention, and this was published in 2009 in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine, and it found that it inhibited something called MDA, and which is a maladialyl dihydride, which is a compound produced from oxidative stress and present a lot of dementia sufferers. And it's also good for diabetes. It has the ability to increase insulin production and decrease the pancreas beta cell death It also reduces blood sugar levels in patients with type 2 diabetes. But in addition, ginseng improves vascular health, cancer protection, stress reduction, memory enhancement, increased energy levels, libido, all that. So one more reason to have some Panax ginseng. Now, sometimes it's not in the science to show you how much of something you should have, but rather what happens when you're deficient. And from the University of Wisconsin, published in the Journal of Biological Chemistry, they found, the scientists found, that zinc deficiency contributed to Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. And so one more reason to make sure that we're getting 15 to 30 milligrams of zinc each day. It could help us. And I mentioned earlier about children, teenagers, living with their cell phones, sleeping frequently with them right there on the pillow. Bad idea. And that interferes with the health of the brain cells. Well, according to the University of Granada in Spain, melatonin helps control weight gain as it stimulates the appearance of what is called beige fat. Now, we all know that melatonin is a natural hormone. We know that it is secreted by the body, and it increases in the dark of night. We also know that it's found in fruits and vegetables like mustard, goji berries, almonds, sunflower seeds, cardamom, fennel, coriander, and cherries. Spanish scientists have discovered that melatonin consumption helps control weight gain because it stimulates the appearance of what is called beige fat, a type of fat that burns calories in vivo instead of storing them. And white adipose tissue stores calories leading to weight gain, whereas beige fat, also known as thinning fat, helps regulate body weight, hence its metabolic benefit. And this was published also in the Journal of Pineal Research. And finally, another study, this one described in Medical News Today, and it was a good study done at Tel Aviv University in Israel, and it says the following: a big breakfast rich in protein and fat improves blood sugar control and makes people feel better than smaller breakfasts in adults with type 2 diabetes. And I would agree with that. I just would not agree with the idea of a big breakfast, because a lot of people will think, oh, you know, I can have 10 slices of bacon, or I can have a big piece of ham, and I can have a super burger, because you see those advertised now. You'll see that they'll give you bacon and eggs and cheese and burgers, all on, you know, and it's a huge amount of food, far more than what the body can digest. Where I'm thinking some almonds, walnuts, blueberries, pomegranate seeds, quality protein, maybe from split pea, brown rice, non-genetically engineered soy. In any case, some almond milk or rice milk or soy milk, your favorite beverage. Put in a little bit of the coconut oil. And now you have fiber, B-complex, phytonutrients, quality high-level protein. So you have everything you need, but it's all living foods. It's really healthy for you. And that will keep you from being hungry for about 5 hours. Finally today, before we go to our calls, anxiety stinks. Well, according to University of Wisconsin, here's what it says, published in the Journal of Neuroscience. Quote, many of us have experienced the calming effect of lovely smells like jasmine and lavender. But a new study has shown that anxiety can cause the brain to transform neural odors, or neutral odors, to negative ones, creating a vicious cycle whereby stress is heightened. And that's what they found. So, quote, after anxiety induction, neutral smells became clearly negative smells. People experiencing an increase in anxiety show a decrease in the perceived pleasantness of odors. It becomes more negative as anxiety increases. Now, I was at a place that was touting itself as an anti-aging spa. I actually went to two. One was in Germany and using live fetal cells that implanted into humans. And another was in the Bahamas by Dr. Popoff and Dr. Goldwag. And more important than the introduction of live cell therapy, which was kind of new in the United States at that time, though it wasn't actually in the United States, it was close enough to the United States in the Bahamas that people could go there and get it. It was the aromatherapy. And they would put you in this simple room, and they would have a little, at that time it was rather crude, it would vaporize, and they would put a scent based upon what Dr. Goldwag felt you needed. And what he found was that based upon a person's level of anxiety and what they were anxious about and how they were acting out and expressing that anxiety, anger, temper tantrums, projections, triangulation of negative energy towards others, oh, you caused me this, oh, you didn't appreciate that at all, he would then come up with a series of aromatherapies. And he would put this little dropper of about 20 drops of some essential oil and then turn it on, and you would sit for an hour there and just relax and breathe deeply, and these wonderful aromas would be in the air and you'd be breathing. And he was a master at this. And he said he was originally inspired by the Bach flower remedies and that this would really calm people. And I found it very calming, as did some of the people there that I interviewed. In fact, that's one of the therapies they look forward to every day, of getting the aromatherapy. Because it wasn't easy to get in the United States at that time. Today, it's completely normal to go into most better massage environments or spas. And while you're getting your either heated rock massage or reflexology, that they would also have not just some soothing music on, but aromatherapy. And that's good. But what this study is showing is that if you don't get therapy and you're anxious, then neutral smells become negative to you, and they actually agitate you. That's an interesting concept. I'm Gary Nall. We're here always to share insights that can help people live a longer and healthier life. We're going to take a brief break, come back, and take your calls. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And also, if you ever have a problem listening online on the computer or listening through a land-based radio station, you can always pick up the phone from anywhere in North America, including Canada, call and listen, or download a show. iTunes, yes, and but this one's easy, just listen live. Here's the number. Write it down so you always have it. 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. everyone. Let's say hello to Peter in Santa Monica, California. Hi, Peter, your turn.
Yes, hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Peter.
Yes, I just was trying to find out if you have any ideas on dry macular degeneration.
Sure. First, for everyone in the audience, I'm sure that you're aware that we lose our vision gradually, more often than not, and because of the deterioration of what is called the macula, M-A-C-U-L-A. Now, that's the part of the retina responsible for our very, very clear vision. And what happens is we have a hardening of the arteries that nourish the retina, and that means you don't get the amount of oxygen and the type and percentage of nutrients you really need. And that leads to vision loss. In fact, it's the number one cause of blindness in the United States. Now, you just mentioned, Peter, that you have a dry, but there's also, and the atrophic is what it's actually called, is the more common. And then we have what is called the exudative or wet. And the degeneration of the macula is generally accompanied by hemorrhaging or leaking fluid from a network of tiny blood vessels to develop under the center of the retina. And so what can we do about this? All right, well, there's a lot we can do. And first and foremost, we have to look at zinc, generally at a little higher doses, and you should really do this under the care of a holistic medical doctor or nurse practitioner. Maintaining your blood sugar level is crucial because I've seen the people who start having elevated fasting glucose levels, your blood sugar level, it precipitates a lot of oxidative damage in the body, including to the eye. That means by having a protein drink or a source of nuts, beans, legumes, pulses, starchy vegetables, things that can maintain a more normal blood sugar will help that. We also want to make sure that we're getting more nutrients actually into our system because, frankly, people eat so much sugar or refined grain products like a bagel, muffins, pastas, and all that breaks down into simple sugars, and that worsens the macular condition. And specifically, retinal pigment abnormalities, characteristics of the condition, with a high glycemic. Also, you want to make sure you're getting your antioxidants. Vitamin C would be the number one, and I would suggest every 2 hours taking up to bowel tolerance in a buffered form of vitamin C with quercetin. I would also look at having some juices that are rich in the carotenoids, and lutein and lycopene, that would be helpful. Also, one of the best herbs in the world for your vision is bilberries. Bill, B-I-L, berry, B-E-R-R-Y. Generally between 150 and 200 milligrams a day. But you could eat blueberries, and that would help you. And ginkgo biloba, that's also good. And you want the flavonoids. Flavonoids are very important. Having about 5 glasses of really good quality vegetable juice a day. Now, you have to do vegetables where you have a thinning juice, meaning your celery and cucumber. That would be your primary vegetables, and maybe green apple. So that's probably about 75% of the actual juice. But then you don't want to limit that. Your really powerful juices would be collard greens, kale, watercress, mustard greens, turnip greens, all right? Those are the ones that are good. Having 1 teaspoon of black cumin seed oil and also having the omega-3 fatty acids from flaxseed or, if you have fish, fish. I would have about 1,000 units of vitamin E broken into 2 units, 500 in the morning, 500 in the afternoon. I would also look at coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol. It's a very important antioxidant to protect against macular degeneration. Grapeseed extract is good too, and vitamin A is excellent. So those are the things that I would do. And also, watermelon with lemon and grapefruit is good. And make sure that you look at getting rid of heavy metals in the body. And the green vegetable juice and vitamin C helps us because that's a natural chelation. It grabs those nutrients and gently takes them out of the body. All right, Peter, all the best to you. Hope that helps you.
Thank you.
And that's Peter from Santa Monica, California. I'm Gary Nall. Your turn. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. This is called Talk Back, one day a week where I don't do commentaries, which I've been doing more and more. In the past 12 months, I've probably written and broadcast more than 200 commentaries. In addition, I like to share the commentaries of other people who generally would not get into the mainstream media. And in between each of these, I'll be giving you some additional insights. Now, I just told you about monosodium glutamate and why I'm opposed to it. But I'm also opposed to aspartame for a lot of reasons. I want to share this from sleuthjournal.com. It'll be posted on garynall.com or progressiveradionetwork.com. Here's what it says. 5 things you may not know about aspartame. First off, aspartame is a chemical that's sold as a zero calorie, meaning it has no calorie sweetener. Now, a lot of people over the last 20 years thought that's a good thing. They looked in the mirror, they saw they were gaining weight. They knew that wasn't good either in their appearance, aesthetically, but also for their health. And so they started to buy things that had no calories. All right, I understand that. But you could buy stuff sweetened with stevia or other natural sweeteners that had very little or no calories, certainly nothing that would impact your body's blood sugar. But that's not the way they went, because they didn't have any advertising campaign. NutraSweet had a humongous background to it financially. It's about 4 calories per gram, and that's not a lot. It was a big deal. But here's the side of it that you didn't know. Aspartame is made from the waste products of E. coli bacteria. Well, to be blunt, it's made from bacterial excrement. It's as if, we don't want to know this stuff, but that's bad enough. But then this excrement is then benzylated and hydrolyzed, and the result of that process is then methylated and debenzylated. And you're thinking, wow, what's all this mean? This is just too much science for me. Well, that's unfortunate, but aspartame is really bacterial excrement that's been put through a harsh chemical process to a consumer that is unaware of that. But then we find out that the bacteria are genetically modified. The patent for aspartame reveals that the E. coli bacteria are genetically manipulated. And that's another way of saying that aspartame is made from the excrement of bacteria that are genetically modified organisms. Of course, the manufacturer claims that there are no GMO molecules in aspartame, and apparently they're saying that genetically modified bacteria produce normal excrement. However, by definition, any GMO organism's metabolism is deranged because it contains foreign DNA. Also, aspartame makes you hungry. Well, that's simply one of the things we found out about it. Not good. Aspartame turns into formaldehyde. That's correct. Aspartame itself doesn't get through your digestive tract. It's quickly broken down into other substances which enter the bloodstream. And these substances are metabolized further. And one of those products is formaldehyde, the stuff used to embalm dead bodies. As if being a poison wasn't bad enough, it's known to cause pneumonia, increase the rate of infections, and can lead to death. And that was known as far back as 1905. Also, and the worst of it is, the FDA scientist spoke out against aspartame's approval. And here's the actual words from Dr. Adrian Gross, an ex-FDA toxicologist, quote, the GD Cereal Company lied, and they didn't submit the real nature of their observations because, had they done that, it is more than likely that a great number of these studies would have been rejected simply for adequacy. What Cereal Company did, they took great pains to camouflage these shortcomings of the study. As I say, filter and just present that to the paper, the FDA, what they wished and the FDA to know, and they did other terrible things. For instance, animals would develop tumors while they were under study. Well, they would remove these tumors from the animals. End quote. Now, the lead investigator, Philip Brodsky, stated for the Congressional Record that he had never seen anything as bad as cereal studies. Dr. Gregory Palmer stated in a letter quoted in the Congressional Record, quote, "Even following the track you did, it seems to me you have only confounded the issue by a series of studies, most of which have severe design deficiencies or obvious lack of expertise in animal management. Because of these twin factors, all the careful and detailed examination of fetuses, all the writing, summarizing, and re-summarizing is of little avail because of the shaky foundations," end quote. Well, to summarize, the FDA investigators were against the approval of aspartame, largely based on the developer's junk science, but the FDA went ahead and approved it anyway. So, what's the bottom line? What's the takeaway message? Well, according to Dr. Edward Group, quote, "Aspartame is made from bacterial excrement, and the bacteria that excrement is out are genetically modified. It makes you hungry, so you want more food. It turns into a poison in your body. The FDA scientists spoke out strongly against this approval, though the FDA ignored them and put it out on the market anyhow." Well, now in retrospect, when we look back, how many other products are on the market that are toxic? A lot of them. And yet we, the people, weren't given the benefit of a doubt. Our interest is not theirs. Next up, before I take another call, and I will be taking another call in a moment, from the Environmental Working Group, Alex Formosi, it says, "Cancer caused by toxic chemicals is grossly underestimated in the United States." It's a long article. I'll just read the first page of it for you because you'll get the message. Mesothelioma is an aggressive and incurable form of cancer. It is almost always caused by inhaling tiny asbestos fibers, which pass through the lungs and become embedded in the mesothelium, a thin layer of tissue that surrounds the internal organs. Some man-made chemicals also cause cancer, just as surely as asbestos does. In 2010, the President's Cancer Panel reported the amount of environmentally induced cancer in the United States had been, quote, grossly underestimated, and that it is definitely bad news. The good news is that the number of cancer cases linked to chemical exposures and resulting in billions of dollars of health care expenditures could be significantly reduced if Congress were to pass legislation to fundamentally change the way toxic substances are approved for use. Since 2005, legislation has been introduced into every Congress to force chemical companies to safety test their products and prove that they don't cause cancer before they end up as an ingredient in items that fill our homes, schools, and workplaces. But Congress hasn't passed any of these proposals. There has been relatively little support in either the House or Senate for revamping the Federal Toxic Substance Control Act, which for nearly 40 years has allowed industry to flood the marketplace with untested and dangerous chemicals, including many that cause cancer. Neither the chemical industry nor a single Republican in Congress has ever supported a previous reform proposal put forth mostly by the late Senator Frank Lautenberg, a Democrat from New Jersey and a pillar of public health protection. All Lautenberg's earlier bills had a very important element. No chemical would be allowed into commerce unless the industries that made it could show that there was a reasonable certainty that the substance would cause no harm to the environment or people, particularly children. And the bills wouldn't have applied only to new chemicals, as important as it is to bar new toxins from coming on the market. It's also essential to assess the tens of thousands of substances already in use to ensure, with reasonable certainty, that they, too, aren't harmful. Getting that job done would obviously reduce everyone's exposure to known or probable carcinogens. And many members of the Rogues Gallery of Cancer-Causing Chemicals could have been banned if any of Lautenberg's proposals had become law. But they didn't. So formaldehyde, asbestos, hexavalent, chromium, there's a whole list. Now, let me tell you how bad it is that just last year over 10,000 people in the United States died of asbestos-related cancer. And formaldehyde is widely used in production of paper and plywood. It's also used as a preservative in certain household cleaning products and some cosmetics. And it's a known carcinogen, according to the federal government. But political interference has stalled the FDA restrictions on formaldehyde emissions from industrial sources and slowed the agency's efforts to protect the public. So what we have is we have industries that make products or byproducts that cause us to be diseased. And instead of dealing with them, instead they protect the industries because the industries have lobbyists. The lobbyists give money to politicians, and that's how it works. Our health just doesn't seem to be important. I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to Kim from New York. Hi, Kim. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. Yeah, I have a question. I was wondering, do you think that alkalizing water filters are something that the general population should use, or only people with certain medical conditions? And if you think people in general should use them, do you think the pitchers work, or do you need to have the machine if you want to do that? I'll listen off air. Thanks.
All right. About 10 years ago, there was an effort to try to sell different types of water health products. And with each one that reared its head, I would contact the manufacturer or the person that was promoting it. I would say, would you please send me this scientific information to justify the claims that I'm hearing? Possibly someone is taking your product and exaggerating it. And I'd actually had this happen about 20 years before that when I was lecturing out in Oregon, and there was a health conference. And I was just there because of some bad weather for an extra day before I flew back to New York. So I went to this local health conference. Here were all these people selling a particular type of algae. That's fine. You know, I don't have a problem with them selling algae. But I happened to know where this algae was grown. And I also happened to have seen that there were thousands of reports of the lake in which the algae being grown was not a pristine lake. And it was very polluted, both by human excrement and industrial pollutants. And therefore, whatever's put into the water is absorbed by the algae. And I asked, do you have any studies of the high lead content? And they said no. And where's your evidence that it cures all these different conditions? Just show it to me. They had none. They had just testimonials. And herein is part of the problem. The health movement has always had those people that would exploit the public's ignorance for money, for gain, greed. I call it the Kevin Trudeau phenomena, where he'll say anything and sell anything that he believes will benefit him and the public. The trouble is, you know, he's gone to prison a couple times and has had to settle, I think his latest fine is $37 million, because he keeps making these claims and he steps over that line. And when you step over a line, there's a consequence to pay. If you have proof that something does something, then just share the evidence. And if you don't, then just be aware that sooner or later, the government is going to come knocking and saying, okay, you made these claims, what is your proof? And I've just seen so much of it in my life. And yet there are legitimate products out there that should be promoted, like pomegranate. It's great. And loganberry and genistein. These are real superstars. They do stuff, and there's a lot of science behind it. There are over 5,000 studies on green tea extracts and what it does. In fact, there are tens of thousands of studies on different diet modifications, the kind of food, the Mediterranean diet, the Okinawan diet, the role of seaweed in our system, low-calorie eating, restricting caloric intake. That's virtually uncontested that it will help us live a longer life. So when people start overselling something, you know, some ionized water, you have to be critical in your thought. That doesn't mean you reject it. You simply do what I do. I simply ask them, please send me the evidence. And then they'll send you what they have, and then you can examine it. If you don't understand it, get someone who does. So then about after the first onslaught of Me Too water products, where they'll sell you for $20 to $100 a certain amount of water, and then if you dilute this in a gallon and drink it, all these miracles supposed to happen, I could find nothing that would justify it. And then came the ionizing water filters. And the first batch I saw came out of Japan. And this was a big multi-level operation. I believe I was told that at one point they had over 50,000 representatives, might have been more or less. But their filters were extraordinarily expensive. And they were supposed to have given you an alkalinity of 8.5, and they were recommending a whole bunch of alkalinity levels with so much water a day from their unique and special filter. And I looked at their science, and I looked at their information, and I could find nothing to support it. So, you know, that's how it works. So I believe that we have been oversold completely on the idea that the water filters are what we need to get alkalinity. In point of fact, if you look at most people's pH and you look at most people's natural blood chemistries, the body is always, through its own macro and micronutrients, including calcium, magnesium, it's always trying to maintain pH balance. But when you start drinking colas or coffee or alcohol, you're immediately shifting that to a lower pH and hence becoming very acidic. If you're a person suffering from gout, arthritis, cancer pain, the idea is that different foods and juices can help to shift from a local acidosis to an alkalosis or vice versa. And now this has a strong history in a certain type of medicine based upon anabolic and catabolic activity. And probably the world's greatest authority on this was Dr. Emmanuel Revisi, R-E-V-I-C-I, who lived to be 102 and who was famous for creating acid and alkaline rebalancing, depending upon what a person was manifesting. So he would always create your opposite. So if you're highly acidic, he would create an input that would give you alkalinity. And it never involved water. Now, you can buy water filters that will give you a natural alkalinity, and that's fine. And they're, you know, $200 or $300. But just drinking good quality mineral water is one good way to get the heavy minerals and to get natural pH control. But your fruit juices are going to do far more for you in rebalancing your pH than while drinking from a particular filter. Hope that answers your question there, Kim, from New York. And let's say hello to Anne from New Jersey. Hi, Anne.
Thanks for taking my call, Gary. I wanted to ask you about implants, dental implants, and if there's any health ramification about them.
All implants can manifest a negative effect if you have not been first tested for biological compatibility. And any holistic dentist could do a simple test to determine whether or not you are going to have an allergic reaction. And then they could find some material for the implant that is more compatible. And then you could benefit from the implants if other procedures have not worked first. So it's all about the testing and to see, are you compatible? Keep in mind, this is a no-brainer. For over 150 years, the most common filling that goes into the mouth is silver. By weight, almost all dental amalgams are 52% mercury. But if you told someone we're giving you a high mercury filling that will leach out every time you eat or chew or have caught or hold water, and that can go to the brain, and it's a neurotoxin, and then people wouldn't have silver fillings. They would have different compatible materials, not silver. The same is true with implants, even bridges, the same. Always test anything that goes in your mouth to see whether or not you're going to have a reaction. If there's a reaction, don't use it. Okay? Thank you, Anne. All the best to you. Now, I just want to go over one more thing before we finish our day today. And that is, I'm concerned that people are not taking an honest look at our oceans. And we should. Whether we live near the ocean or not, whether we are aware of the oceans are rising, and I believe that the oceans are going to be rising a lot faster than what we've been giving credit for. We're paying attention to Fukushima. We're paying attention to the 4 nuclear reactors that have been closed, and so that's good. But we're paying no attention whatsoever to Yellowstone supervolcano. So I want to be there to give you a heads up. Now, we do not have any idea when this is going to erupt, but we do know it will. It might be 30 years from now, might be 100 years from now, but it could be a lot sooner because people are very concerned because of what's been happening. Let me quote Mike Snyder's activist post. Quote, right now, the ground underneath Yellowstone National Park is rising at a record rate. In fact, it is rising at a rate about 3 inches per year. The reason why this is such a concern is because underneath the park sits the Yellowstone supervolcano, the largest volcano in North America. Scientists tell us that it is inevitable that it will erupt again one day, and when it does, the devastation will almost be unimaginable. A full-blown eruption of the Yellowstone supervolcano would dump about 10-foot-deep layer of volcanic ash up to 1,000 miles away, and it would render much of the United States uninhabitable. When most Americans think of Yellowstone, they tend to conjure up images of Old Faithful. But the truth is that sleeping underneath Yellowstone is a volcanic beast that could destroy our nation in a single day, and now that beast is starting to wake up. The Yellowstone supervolcano is so vast that it's hard to put into words. According to Daily Mail, the magma, or the hot spot underneath Yellowstone, is approximately 300 miles wide. The Yellowstone caldera is one of nature's most awesome creations and sits atop North America's largest volcanic field. Its name means cooking pot or cauldron, and it's formed when land collapses following a volcanic eruption. In Yellowstone, some 400 miles beneath the Earth's surface is a magma hotspot, which rises to 30 miles underground before spreading out over an area of 300 miles. Atop this, but still beneath the surface, sits the slumbering volcano. So when most Americans think of volcanic eruptions in the United States, they remember the catastrophic eruption of Mount St. Helens back in 1980. But that eruption would not even be worth comparing to a full-blown eruption of the Yellowstone supervolcano. And now the area around Yellowstone is becoming increasingly seismically active. In fact, Professor Bob Smith says that he has never seen anything like this in the 53 years that he has been watching Yellowstone. Until recently, Bob Smith had never witnessed 2 simultaneous earthquakes swarming in his 53 years of monitoring seismic activity in around Yellowstone. Now, Smith, a University of Utah geophysics professor, has seen 3 swarms at once, and 130 earthquakes hit in September alone in Yellowstone in 1 week. And that's got a lot of Yellowstone observers extremely concerned. Yellowstone's recent earthquake swarm started September 10th and were still shaking until 11:30 a.m. on September 16th. At least 130 earthquakes of magnitude 0.6 to 3.6 have occurred in these 3 areas. However, most have occurred in the lower Geyser Basin. And the University of Utah statement says, notably, much of the seismically active area is occurring in swarms. So what could be the worst-case scenario? Well, here it is. A full-blown eruption would leave two-thirds of the United States completely uninhabitable. It would explode with a force of thousands of times more powerful than Mount St. Helens and spewing lava far into the sky. A cloud of plant-killing ash would fan out and dump a layer 10 foot deep up to 1,000 miles away. Two-thirds of the United States would become uninhabitable as toxic air seeps through, grounding thousands of air flights and forcing millions to leave their homes. And a full-scale eruption of Yellowstone could happen up to 1,000 times more powerful than Mount St. Helens. And it would spew ash 25 miles into the air. And that would be really bad. So just wanted to give you what could be a very serious event, and we should at least be paying attention to it. I'm Gary Noll. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to our next program together.